Monica Susana. TIK Radio. In the fast-paced world we live in, finding moments of stillness and self-reflection can be a rare luxury. The Late Show with the Moon is a supportive show, an empathic environment for sharing, listening, and connecting with others on a deep emotional level. It is like your sanctuary for mindfulness, personal growth, and thoughtful exploration. Join us in this welcoming sanctuary where vulnerability is celebrated and authenticity. The show is where real people share their real experience, thoughts, and feelings. Our mission is to foster empathy, inspire resilience, and create a sense of community in a world that sometimes feels disconnected. TIK Radio aims to provide a supportive and inclusive platform where people can openly express themselves, share their experiences, and build a sense of community through the power of storytelling.
Well, actually, the plate is right behind my throat.
Okay.
The plates are right behind my throat when I'm out in this really cold weather.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I feel it. When I breathe in, it touches the plates.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I heard the same story for another person that had, you know, and says, when it's cold, I'm like, really? I'm like, what do you feel? He goes, I can feel it.
Yeah, I got about 4 inches of titanium in my neck.
Okay.
And it sits right behind my esophagus and my bronchial tube. Right from my throat, and it's in that area right below my Adam's apple, and then it's about where my Adam's apple starts down to the first rib in my chest. I'm plated, so I can't bend my head very much.
Orchata Dushan says that's what she said.
Yeah.
So when you go to the airports and you pass like the security, do you get like the little sound? No.
I haven't been to a frickin' airport in years. I don't fly. If I can't drive there, I ain't going.
Okay, okay.
And I've driven across the United States.
I like driving. I like road trips. I really like road trips.
Yeah, I don't like to go to the airport because they're going to look at the daggone skid marks in my underwear when they open up my baggies. You know, they don't need to see that crap. That's between me and my underwear.
Yes. I know.
You don't need to see it. I got a hole in my sock.
That's personal, right?
No.
The patrols. It's like, yeah. Hi. So they already know it's a local, you know? But it took me.
It's like me. I went down across the border in 81. Uh-huh. And, I just showed him my military ID card, and he just flagged me through, you know, and I came back, showed him my military ID card, and flagged me through, because that was my passport while I was on active duty before they changed the law. Now they don't want you to do that stuff in different places. Because when I went to Panama, you know, I spent time down in Panama there a couple months, two times, and you can go anywhere. You just show them your ID card and go into Colombia. You can go into Costa Rica. You know, they didn't care because it was a military ID card. That was my passport for a lot of things. I couldn't like fly across the ocean to Europe on my military ID card. You did have to have credentials, you know.
Oh, in order to do that, right.
When you're in an area, it's like they already know you're there and they're go ahead and let you come over and spend your American money, you know. But it's completely different now. I mean, they've changed a lot of that stuff out.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, handsome, I didn't see you that you called. So I remember that. Hi, Jeff. How are you?
I'm good. Hey, nice to see you on this great Friday night. Hey, Rocky, it's good to see you, man. I was in Panama a lot, too, with the AC-130 gunship, only, you know, we weren't supposed to be there. Yeah. I've never been to Mexico, but I've been to Honduras, Nicaragua.
I have, too. Salvador.
Howard Air Force Base in Panama is where we were a lot. Yeah. And you know, since we weren't, you know, we had the AC down there. I was stationed at Hurlburt up in the panhandle of Florida. And we always called it going down south because everywhere we went, weren't supposed to be, right? So, you know, for the first three rotations that I went to Panama, you know, we were restricted to base. Have you ever been to Howard Air Force Base down there?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I spent two tours down there with Jungle School.
Fort Sherman. Right. Right, right.
In the 70s.
Yeah. But, you know, it got a little boring at times because we would do a 30-day rotation that had been going on for a decade, you know, back in the 80s. And there's a main thoroughfare that runs through Howard, and as long as it's code alpha status, you know, they let civilian traffic go through. Yeah. And, we were always threatened, don't you dare leave the base. You're not allowed to go anywhere. And, you know, so we were confined to base. But, you know, some of my older deployment team members, I was probably the youngest. I was the only one that wasn't a sergeant. I was a senior.
You're the only one that was scared? All the others didn't care.
Hey, you know what, though? The guys that trained me were Vietnam veterans, so they taught me a lot. They taught me a great deal, and I miss them. I miss those guys.
I had a lot of Vietnam veterans when I first went in the 82nd back in the 70s.
But,
I felt like an outsider.
Yeah. Well, I went in the military. I signed up in 1986 at 17 years old. And I thought I was just joining the Air Force. I didn't know they had a thing called special operations, but that's where I ended up.
Yeah.
And I figured out after my third rotation down there that these guys were, you want to play cards? And that was code for jumping in a taxi and heading down to these bars in Panama.
Oh, no.
And I remember there was these two bars we'd go to. One was called the Ancon, and the other was called the Ovalo. Have you ever heard of them?
No, that was after I'd been there. I mean, I went to Cologne, and I went over to Panama City.
Right. Right. So have you ever been across the Bridge of Americas?
Names.
Huh? I remember one of the most beautiful sights I've ever seen was going across the Bridge of Americas at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's spectacular, isn't it?
I thought it was pretty cool. I mean, you know, it's a bridge to me. I mean, it's a great scenery, you know, and see a lot of stuff.
It's so amazing that you guys have been into so many different places, you know, and meet all the people that you've met, you know, with all your stories. Oh my God, it's so amazing.
That's the cool thing. I didn't get to go to a lot of great places. Most of the places I went to weren't much fun. Like Honduras and Nicaragua were not very good at all.
I flew into the Honduras Air Base there. We were doing a 3-week exercise there. And I went in as ADVON, and that was the first time I actually got to raid a daggone Air Force diner.
Oh, and did you not notice the food's a little better?
Oh, hell yeah. That's why I say we raided it. We went in there and ate our hearts out, man.
Well, what was great when I was in up at Hurlburt, which is the headquarters of Special Ops, I was in First South for Special Operations Wing. They were throwing money in there. While they were closing other bases down, they were feeding money into our base. Our dining hall was amazing. I mean, geez, oh, Pete.
I mean, I'd have to get out my maps and look at what airbase I went to, but it was on, let's see. Oh, gosh, it was on the west side, but kind of in the middle. It was a pretty active base. I mean, C-130s. We came in on C-141s, and there was some AC-130s.
I always enjoyed a 141 versus a 130.
Yeah. I prefer the C-5A, though, if I'm just flying.
Right. What branch were you in?
There. I was in the 82nd in the Army.
Oh, you were airborne?
Yeah, I put in 18 years in the airborne.
That is freaking awesome. So you were up in North Carolina then, right?
Yeah, I was at Fayetteville.
Yeah, and that's Fort why Bragg, all, that's why you're Fort near Liberty Pope now. Air Force Base where all the 130s yep. are.
I drank with a few of those guys.
I bet. Yeah, I was with the AC-130s and the HH-53J Pavlo helicopters.
Yeah.
So if you remember Tom Clancy's Clear and Present Danger.
Oh,
that,
yeah.
Remember that, that book?
I actually have a friend up in Maryland when I went up there for one of my operations. I was up at Walter Reed, and I stopped off at his house. And he took me over to the harbor where they shot that opening scene. It's like, holy shit.
Right. But a lot of that was about Black Eagle Ops and what we were doing in Central America.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, of course, I had to sign a bunch of paperwork when I got out. But boy, they tried to twist my arm to reenlist. You'll never be a part of anything that's as important as the rest of your life. And they even tried
I'll to tell
say,
you,
well, you're never out, just so you know. And I'm like, yeah, I know. I still got another 4 years where you can recall me. And
tell you
my
what,
base commander
back
said, nope, you're never out.
Back when I went to Grenada, on the opening days of
Grenada,
they went through and they literally whitewashed the Dagon airstrip down there with C-130s. And I never knew how powerful the damn 20mm was until I got around the buildings up on the hill and I could see through the buildings.
You're talking about the AC?
The AC-130s. They went through there and they strafed the airport and a couple, some fighter jets went in there and knocked over some stuff.
Right. When I was in, you know, and they're all retired and there's new ones now. But ours, the troop door, you couldn't even get in. Actually, when we were going down south, that's what we called it when we would, because we were in the panhandle of Florida. We called it going down south.
Yeah.
And anyway, the troop door, you know, on the left side, you can't even get in. That's just full of television equipment, you know, lenses. Yeah. And then, you know, just aft of that is your 20, your twin Gatling guns, which will tear up a football field in about 5 seconds.
They took out 100 head of cattle at the end of the runway with their with the AC-130.
Right.
They literally destroyed the cattle herd that was grazing down at the end of the runway.
Oh my goodness!
Like, holy crap!
But you're talking about that 40mm tank piercing shell, and then aft of the wing is the 105 howitzer.
Yep.
So when we were getting ready to deploy to go down and do Operation Just Cause, you know, the Panama invasion to take out Noriega, I was out on the flight line one night with a crew chief, and we were stenciling Feliz Navidad Noriega.
Oh my god!
Barrel. Because if you remember in '89, that's the time that we went down. And what a lot of people don't know is that when we finally had him confined to his compound, we got intel that he hated American heavy metal music. Hated it. So we surrounded his compound with huge, like, you know, huge speakers. Uh-huh. And he pounded him 24/7 with loud heavy metal music until we finally drove his ass out.
And it's,
it was a little bit of a psychological operation.
I think Rocky, are you here? Yeah. He's muted. Let me see. I didn't mute him.
Yeah, I was going to ask him if he ever got to Korea, because that was really the only... I got to go to Korea.
Rocky, I don't hear... Oh, he's back. Uh-huh, good.
Uh-huh. Yeah, is he there? Yeah, it's been a year down at Camp Casey.
Rocky, did you ever go to Korea for spirit?
Yeah, it's been a year in Camp Casey.
Oh, wow.
Did you? Yeah, I went to Kunsan. Remember Operation Team Spirit, the joint readiness operations we would do as a show of strength against the North?
Yeah, Team Spirit?
Yeah, Operation Team
Spirit. I was there for the 88 Team Spirit.
I also was out in the field when they had... You and I were there together,
oh, my
brother.
God, now reunited.
That is crazy. The whole place smells like kimchi. And tell me, did you ever drink any soju?
Wake up in the morning and go run 4 miles with the smell of kimchi everywhere.
Everywhere you go, it smells like kimchi.
So it's you reuniting after how many years? 1988? Oh, my God.
We were both there for Team Spirit 1988. That is freaking great. Yeah.
We need to celebrate.
It wasn't a lot of fun. It's a 30-day operation, and I usually spent most of it in a chem suit.
Wow.
But I also spent the entire time with the Olympics. We had to hang out around the outskirts of the Seoul area where they're having the Olympics.
Yeah.
So 35 years after that, you guys are reunited and talking about it?
That is so crazy. We were both there in 88. That is crazy. And we were both in Panama.
Yep. Both in Panama, both in Honduras.
Honduras.
Yep.
And if you got anywhere near the Mosquito Coast, you know why it's called that.
I didn't get near the Mosquito Coast. We went out to the jungle there in Honduras, and we were running around out there aggressing some of the Honduran military.
Yeah.
We went around pulling the aid station. We pull into a goddamn little
Jeff,
village.
And Rocky just turned 68 yesterday. It was his birthday. So.
Yeah, he's just ahead of me. Happy birthday, Rocky. Happy birthday. And you are 68 years young, my friend. 68 years young. I'll be 56 next month. So.
Well, you're a youngin'. I can't even remember what I was doing when I was 56.
Well, I'm trying to be a good man. That's what I'm trying to do.
Tell him what you're going to do, Jeff. Tell him what you're going to do for 90 days.
Yes. I'm hooking up with some veterans. I'm hooking up with some veterans, and we are going to an undisclosed location, and we're going to rehone our skills.
Yep.
Because we have a feeling that might not be a good idea to be our... second line of defense, you know? You're never out.
We already have our range cards. We've had them for a long time here. Some of the guys that live around me, you would be surprised what they own.
Yeah.
You know, and legally own.
Oh, wow.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And we're even
going to
do that
it. Some of that stuff was handed down from our fathers from World War II.
Just so you know, we've postponed it 2 weeks. 2 weeks from then the date.
So it's more. You have more days to be here. Okay.
Well, myself and two other people have VA appointments that are kind of important.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
So anyway, so hey Rocky, Airborne man, did you do Halos?
No, I didn't do Halos. I was basically static jump. I jumped out of. Go back to the Caribou, the C-130, the C-141, UH-1H, and then the Black Hawk.
Right.
I've jumped out of all of those.
Amazing.
Wow.
Amazing.
I never done free fall. I wasn't in the right MOS to do the free fall.
The highest, I ended up going to Benningham Jump School, and most of ours were, you know, 15,000 feet, but I ended up having to go and do Halos at 35 to 36,000 feet, wearing thermals and an oxygen mask, and unfortunately, a 100-pound pack too. And I just had the MRI done on my back, and I'm okay as long as I take naproxen. But they found that I have deep compressions in my spine.
I have a bad back too, man. Disc. Humping rucksacks and shit.
But you know how it is.
I'll tell you some of the stuff I had to jump. I had to jump WIC containers.
Yeah.
You know, it's basically power. A 105 box with all your equipment stuffed into it, radios and batteries and commo wire and crap. Weighs about 150 freaking pounds, and you got the door position. All you do is lean out and let the props suck you out.
I jumped
the M60 machine gun. I jumped the Dragon, and I jumped regular tactical crap when I wasn't on a specific weapon.
Wow.
You know, when you're young, you think you're invincible, but I hit the ground pretty hard a couple times, and I'm like, man, I'm gonna feel that when I get older one day. Well, We're getting there now.
I hit the ground one time here in North Carolina. We did an AWOD jump. I hit the ground. I was out for 6 hours and nobody could find me.
Holy crap. I finally
gained consciousness. I gathered all my stuff up and walked into the rally point. And everybody's yelling at me about where you been? And I jumped into, I can't remember the name of the operation. It was in California. It was the largest mass attack since D-Day. We had four drop zones and nobody.
I'm not familiar.
Yeah, that was one we done at Fort Irwin. The California National Guard thought they could beat our AAA defense.
Yeah, for
any
sure.
Armor and shit. That was just back when they were starting with the Miles equipment, and they had this stuff all over their stuff. And we jumped in, and we never knew about the Santa Ana winds.
To a jump.
And I don't think anybody hit the drop zones. I did. I jumped on gold and landed on silver right at the edge of silver into the rocks. Broke my ankle.
Whoa.
We had 97 injuries and 4 fatalities on the jump.
Ouch.
Yeah.
That was acceptable.
My instructor, he used to, those halos, you're just all over the place when you go out, at that altitude. And you've got to gain your flatness, I can't remember what you call that.
But then he would gain that flatness with that rucksack between your legs.
He would fly into you and knock you silly to see if you could regain it before you hit.
How many tryouts you needed to do?
Jeez. All I know is I remember when I got selected for the deployment team, and they're like, you got to go to jump school up at Benning. That tower actually scared the crap out of me.
Yeah.
But then I'm sure that after jumping.
I only got afraid of heights over 5,000 feet.
Yeah.
That's the highest I've been in the helicopter is 5,000
feet. But then Rocky and Jeff, after jumping so many times, of course you're resilient. Like, you're not afraid of, other things, After that, I think it's. Your body changed. I don't know. I would, jumping.
I'll be honest. I was pretty terrified a lot of times. I mean, a lot of the stuff that I went through, I went through survival school, POW camp, jump school, you name it. I was in special ops. We were air commandos. So, that was the deal. We had to protect the 130 where it went. And mostly what we did in the 80s was go down south, and it was actually recon. We didn't even send the AC up with any ammo. We just set it up with a lot of chaff and flare. And if you don't know what chaff and flare is, I'm sure Rocky does. Chaff is shredded aluminum that jams radar. And flare is just so if you get they get locked on by an air-to-ground
SAM.
Or SAM, the flare shoots out, and then the...
It is in psychology. They train you to do everything... And what you bring with you helps you out.
Yes.
You can always tell the kids who never went outside from the kids who played outside till dark. Because they knew what it was about. You know, they knew how to use the self-discipline to get to different things when the lights were, you know, when it was dark. I knew guys who were scared of the dark when I was in the Army. And it's like, holy crap.
Right. Right. But, you know, in Air Force Spec Ops, we did everything at night. We did.
Did you ever waterboard yourselves?
Everything we did was at night. We did not do anything during the daylight. Only at night. Everything.
Oh, my gosh.
Always under the cover of darkness.
Did you ever get drunk with your fellow crewmen and waterboard each other for fun?
Well, we used to we used to go to a mud pit and just see who was the last man standing, and believe it or not, it was usually me.
I
can take some hits.
We used to sit around the barracks, and whoever got drunk, and breathe slowly. Even while they're waterboarding you and water getting in your mouth, you just swallow and breathe.
I don't know why they didn't waterboard me in POW camp. I think maybe they just forgot.
Well, they probably had a restriction on it. We used to do this we would freelance this in the barracks. I mean, we did all kinds of weird stuff. We were doing drugs.
Yeah, we did,
I mean,
too. Especially,
that's why they called us the Jumping Junkies back in the 70s.
Well, our uniforms were known as sterilized battle dress uniforms, sterilized BDUs. They have nothing on them. We were allowed to wear our hair a little bit out of rags. Our uniforms had nothing on them, not a damn thing. A Velcro patch that you peel off before you deploy.
Yep.
We were totally nondescript everywhere we went.
Wow.
Yeah, a lot of things that people did back in the 70s, you know, like I said, I had a lot of guys in my platoon that were multiple tours in Vietnam, and they would just teach all the new guys some of the stuff that they went through. And one time we went out to the field and we were aggressing the intel battalion. Mm-hmm. And toward the end of it, they said, okay, the field problem's over, blah, blah, blah. And they literally came up and captured some of us and took us out to their little camp made out of concertina wire.
Yeah.
I spent 3 days solid in a damn wall locker buried in the ground.
Yeah.
And they were trying to break me because I wouldn't tell them anything. I wouldn't even give them my name, rank, and serial number.
Yep.
And they broke one of my fingers trying to get me to talk.
Basically.
Yeah. Wow. It was said that they literally destroyed a goddamn chaplain. I mean, they knew how to hit this guy. They hit him hard, and they just talked all kinds of trash to him, and literally it literally destroyed the guy. And I was in that damn camp for 4.5 days. They tried to break me, had nothing to eat. They told me a little bit of water now and then to keep me from dying.
Yep.
Get me in a wall locker most of the 24-hour time period. I literally ate bugs in the damn wall locker.
Oh.
If I found it crawling on me, I ate it.
You have to go alone in a place in your mind to pass the time.
It's all psychological.
No shit, right? And I never, you know what was funny is, like, my mom is really licensed to carry in all 50 states, and last summer, she was 17 when she had me. And I watched her pick off a woodchuck with a .22 at 55 yards.
Yep.
That's pretty amazing. She's the one that taught me how to shoot. And, you know, making marksman wasn't a problem.
Well, I had parents that were a little more pacifist. And I literally had to find people to learn a lot of things that I've learned. Like hunting, I learned that from one of my dad's friends, mm-hmm. who's still alive today, and I still talk to him regularly. And you know, he told me one time, he said, man, he said, you went a hell of a lot further than anybody ever thought you would do, you know, because I was, my grandfather picked me up after I was born, and he seen me for the first time when my mom and dad moved back to Indiana, and he picked me up and told my mom, I said, this is my rebel.
Did you say in Indiana?
And from that point on, I was hard ass.
Yeah, he said Indiana. You were born in Indiana, Rocky, or?
No, I was born in Georgia. I was born in Augusta, Georgia.
You spent time in Indiana? Because that's where I'm from. That's where I was born and raised, is Indiana.
Terrible Hope.
I'm in Indiana right now.
I'm from Terrible Hope.
My dad, who's been pretty much out of my life forever. Terrible Hope.
Oh, watch out. We might be cousins. We might
be
cousins.
Oh, no. Yeah. There we go.
It wouldn't surprise me. Wouldn't surprise me. Terre Haute, Indiana. Yeah, we nicknamed it Terrible Hope, and there is a certain stench in that town. What is that smell in that?
Commercial solvents. Commercial solvents.
Is that what it is?
The chemical plant down in the south end of town.
Well, my father, before my mother wisely divorced him when I was five, was a full ride, set all the records in the state of Indiana at the time as a running back, and got a full ride to Indiana State University there in Terrible Hope. But, of course, his sophomore year, he was partying quite a bit, doing drugs, drinking, and didn't make the team his second year, and he lost his scholarship, so... Then he was going home on the weekends, and he got my mom pregnant with me. So here I am.
Mm-hmm. Where'd your dad work at?
Where did he work at?
Yeah, hell, so I many know. Industries there in Terre Haute that I might know some of the people who worked in some of those places.
Now, actually, I was born, if you go straight north on US 41, you know, it runs on the west side of
it was all the way to Chicago.
All the way to Chicago. Well, I grew up in, well, not grew up, but I was born in Newton County and went to kindergarten in Kentland, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to put me in second grade because I could read and write in kindergarten. But my dad wouldn't let him because... he wanted me to be an athlete like him, and I would be too small. Which, to be honest with you, is interesting because I started high school at 5 foot tall and graduated at 5'10", and I'm just a little shade over 6'2" now. I grew 4 inches in the military.
Yeah.
My TI in the Air Force, my TI, Rocky, in the Air Force, oh, man, he was all over my shit. I was a squad leader. I made honor graduate, and I was always getting pulled out of classes, and I didn't know what they were about. And because I had my stepdad in my head, he was an asshole. He's dead now. I've made peace with that. But anyway, he told me I wouldn't make it through basic training. Screw him. I did more than make it through.
Don't sound like you made.
But my TI
man.
Became Chief Master Sergeant.
Hi, Cody.
United States Air Force.
Hola, tick. Sorry.
What I was saying was my training instructor at Lackland down in San Antonio.
Yep.
He made Chief Master Sergeant of the entire United States Air Force. And I found out because I had a day, my days off of work from where I was working was Wednesday, and I was flipping channels in 1997, and I caught C-SPAN, and they were having the congressional hearings on Tailhook. You remember Tailhook, which was about sexual misconduct in the military?
Yep.
So they have the top four enlisted up there talking about what they were going to do to resolve this issue. And holy crap, they turned the camera on the guy in the blue suit in the Air Force, the top. It's Creasy. He was a tech sergeant when he was my TI. And now he is the top enlisted individual in the United States Air Force in 1990.
I had a DI at Fort Polk where I took basic and AIT at the old Tigerland. And our senior drill sergeant was the next step down. I guess you would call him the assistant drill sergeant. That guy was on the Ed Sullivan Show 5 times with the Army drill and rifle team in between his tours in Vietnam. He was a tough guy, but when I went there, my uncle told me, he said, when you go there, don't let them mess with your head. I said, okay. Yeah, he did. He said, don't let them mess with your head. My uncle spent 20 years in the Army. He said, don't let them mess with your head. Whatever they say, you know, just kind of go with it. But if you try to insult you, come up with a good reason.
Yeah, don't let them
make them laugh.
And it's like all, you know, POW camp, basic training, everything that's hard is temporary. It's temporary.
Yeah, but back in 75, they could still knock the shit out of you.
Oh, they were knocking the shit out of us in 86.
Wait, no, I'm talking about physically knock the shit out of you.
I'm not kidding.
The first 2 weeks we were there, my assistant drill sergeant wasn't there because he was in the stockade for beating one of the trainees up in a prior company. Okay? That's how bad it was. Tigerland was a place where they sent people to go to Vietnam.
Tigerland.
And before they closed it.
I saw that movie.
Yeah. Before they closed it, okay, they were still putting guys in 75 and early parts of 76 before that, I think they closed off North Fort.
They went to Southeast Asia and were doing some dirty deeds done dirt cheap.
Well, yeah, but the whole point of it was is they sent guys there to be hardened to go to Vietnam. Tigerland was the worst place you could go for a comfortable basic training at any time.
The only thing I really ever get emotional about is Vietnam veterans. Because when I went in, they were on the tail, you know, the ones that made a career out of the military that had served in Vietnam. And, you know, they're the ones that made sure I made it home in one piece. You know what I mean? They were hard on me.
I had a lot of those guys. I had a lot of those guys, but when I first got to basic and AIT and met Drill Sergeant Curry, this guy was 6 feet 6 inches tall.
Ah.
Black as midnight.
That was greasy.
Him and his wife were the Louisiana State champions of Taekwondo and karate.
Oh boy.
And he could slap you before you could even start to do a daggone reaction to it. But he when he done his first inspection in the morning, is that 9 o'clock, come through and inspect us. He's going through there and he would just knuckle slap these guys. You mean she made you pay like that? And from that point on, that guy did not mess with me the entire time. He did not single me out. And when I got ready to graduate, he said, you're not going to like the 82nd. It's all spit, shine, and polish. You need to go to Special Forces.
Rocky,
but,
and
I was in the first time,
man.
They had a downsizing and you couldn't get in.
And you showed him something, and that's what Creasy wanted to see out of me.
Yeah,
Creasy was an 8-year Marine before he went into the Air Force. And
Curry pulled out 4 goddamn tours with long range reconnaissance in Dagon, Vietnam.
Yeah,
Drill Sergeant Towers was in 6 different units, and most of those were long range reconnaissance. And I was there for infantry. Our fucking platoon was going to the 82nd, and we were up at 4 o'clock in the morning. Running at 5, get back after doing the running and calisthenics and the daggone obstacle course in time to get a quick breakfast, change clothes, and get in formation for training. And he said, we've done that to you so that when you go to jump school, you're going to be prepared. Most of the guys that I was with, we would run out and catch the road guards just for the hell of it.
Yeah.
We were running our asses off. We set so many records with that because they wanted to do that. They said, we're going to go set a record. We did the 27-mile march with full duffel bags of everything we owned at the time.
And 27-mile march, just so anybody that might be listening understands, that's just over a marathon.
Yeah, just over a marathon. And we walked that sucker from 6 o'clock in the morning till 6 o'clock in the evening. And we were the fastest unit to ever go through that road march in the history of Fort Polk.
Awesome. Wow. Awesome.
Because we were dead at the time, too. I mean, we were wore out.
I got to tell you about Creasy, though, okay? Because you're going to freaking appreciate and love this, all right? Okay, so for 2 weeks, we had a different training instructor. We, you know, you had a drill instructor in an Air Force, are called TIs. Training. And that's why when I got out, you know, because being in special ops, it never freaking stopped. I had to be worldwide immunized for freaking everything. And I swore when I got out, I'd never take another damn shot, not even a tetanus. And I never took that vaccine either. But anyway, so while we're getting these shots, you know, you're going through the line like cattle as they just poof, 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 poof. And our TI said, well, the Black Plague's coming and nothing's going to prepare you for that. And we were like, the Black Plague? It's the Black Plague. They kept telling us the Black Plague was coming. And, man, I mean, we're killing it in inspections and, you know, I picked a really good squad, and anyway, the assemblers, they let us know that, you know, our TI had been on leash with you. We started failing inspections, and on Christmas Eve, 1986, he calls me into the office, and he said, I'll be back in 3 days. And if you fail inspection again, you're going back to day one of training. And at this point, I'm almost halfway through, you know. And you don't want to go back to day one.
You're recycled.
Yeah, yeah. So I realized what I'd done wrong. My problem child, I had, his last name was Jones. I had him at the end of my, you know, the row of bunks. And I flip-flopped my squad. I put that asshole right next to me, and Smitty, who was my right-hand man, I put him at the other end. I flip-flopped my squad, and we drilled for 3 days. Christmas Day, the day after Christmas, and the next day, and we passed when Creasy came back. And thank goodness, because I really didn't want to go back to day one of training.
I'll tell you something that's really cool.
What's that?
When I was in Korea... Back when I was in Korea, I was working over at the hospital helping clean off the damn air pad there for the helicopter. And one of the helicopter pilots who was going out to do a check on his aircraft was one of my old DIs who took over for Drill Sergeant Power, was Drill Sergeant Pilkington. And I go, Drill Sergeant Pilkington, like that. He turns around and goes, calls me by my name. He says, where the hell you been? He was a pilot. He was a CW3 running medevac there at Camp Casey.
Wow.
Is that cool or what?
That is cool. remember I told you about that?
That was like 14 freaking years later. Wow. Yeah, well, that's like 14, 15 years later, I meet him again.
Remember I was telling you about the HH-53J Pavlo helicopter? That was on the cover of Tom Clancy's Clear and Present Danger. That was exclusive to Hurlburt Field. Well, there was a bubble on the front of that, and then at the time it was state-of-the-art technology. It's known as FLIR, forward-looking infrared.
Mm-hmm.
And we were testing that out. I was actually at Dobbins for 2 months. While we tested it out in the north, in the mountains of northern Georgia and southern Tennessee, because that was the terrain that we were, is very similar to the terrain down south. So, I'm stationed in Fort Walton Beach, Florida. And to be honest,
I was doing really well with the ladies back then. Everybody thought I looked like Tom Cruise, and I went ahead and told, and my last name's White, so I was telling those little white lies that I was a pilot.
Oh, now we know. No,
oh, just I was kidding. Giving the girls the fantasy, you know. I know, it was wrong. But, you know,
I have to cut you, I have to cut you off for a second. I have to cut okay. you off for a second.
Okay.
Your last name is White. My yes, great grandfather's name on my mom's side was White.
No.
James White.
Oh, my. Dude, there I we guarantee go. You we're probably freaking related.
There we go. There we go. Now you're family.
Well, this is where it gets fun, okay? Uh-huh. So I'm up at Dobbins, and really, I'm not doing squat up there. You know, they put us up, and I remember it was off of Windy Hill Road in Atlanta. That's where Dobbins Air Force Base is. And I met this gal that worked at this. It was like a Hooters, only it was called Boomers, and she was really good looking. And I would bring her, and they put us up in a really nice hotel. It was called the Bradbury Suites or something. And, I mean, there was actually birds in cages in this place. So, yeah, I'm bringing her back through. But the flight crew is always debriefing after they go out at night. I told you everything's done at night. And it must have been like, I don't know, 1:30, 2 in the morning. I'm bringing her in to my room at the hotel. And Ken Cipperly, Captain Cipperly, who I'd gotten to know, he goes, Airman White, would you mind introducing your escort? So I had to go over and you know, these are officers, you know, and I'm enlisted. So I introduced him and, you know, very respectfully. And then I saw that one of the pilots' last name was White. And he said, would you mind excusing your escort for a minute? I'd like to speak with you. This is going to knock your socks off. Turns out his name's Jeff White. Same as me.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And chicks that I was meeting on spring break were looking the name up in the phone book and calling his house, and he's married. And I had told him I was a pilot, and my name was Jeff White, same as him. So he goes, this is what's going to happen when we get back to Fort Walton. You're coming over for dinner, and you're meeting my wife. Because you have caused me a lot of bullshit, Airman.
Oh, wow. That your lie got you in trouble.
Because I was telling chicks on the beach I was a pilot. And they knew my name was Jeff White. Same as, the coincidence is crazy, right?
So now, do you think you're related, Rocky and Jeff?
Well, I tell you, if his mother or his grandmother or any of his aunts were from Decatur, Illinois, then chances are we are.
Well, they're from the Indiana, Illinois border.
Okay, well, see.
there we go. Yeah,
I can't think of all their names. One of his daughters, which was my grandmother's sisters, I've got pictures of them downstairs. One of her sisters was named Pearl.
There is a Pearl in our family.
Well, goddamn, here we go.
Oh my goodness!
Do you know the significance behind James White is?
Well, do you know about Sir William White?
Well, hold on. I'll give you a brief history of it.
All right, you go
James
first.
James White ran with the Younger and James gang, got caught in Minnesota, spent 5 years at the territorial prison, got out, went back over to Chicago, got on the same train line that he was robbing with the Cole Younger and James gang.
There you go.
retired as a damn conductor after about 40 years. Had
Can
a half had a well, he had a hotel, or they didn't have a name for it. It was a hotel. It was called something, a boarding house in Decatur, Illinois. He was on the Burlington Northern going from Chicago to Seattle. And in Seattle, where he would stay over several times a month, him and a bunch of other guys formed the Fraternal Order of the Eagles.
Ah, no kidding.
My dad got into it because my mom was related to him, and he was a founding the founding member of the Eagles, and they let my dad join the Eagles, which got all of us kids in the Eagles. But then he had, I'm trying to think, six kids, I think it was, six or seven kids.
Oh.
Yeah, I knew some of them who worked in Terre Haute at the foundry, the Garland Foundry. Down there south of town there, just before you cross
that. Dude, I was born in Northwest Indiana on the Illinois-Indiana line.
Yeah. You see, I show you how close it is now. You know where Hubs, Illinois is, right across the border up in that area?
In Moments.
That's where my grandfather was from, and he married my grandmother from Decatur, moved to Terre Haute.
Oh, okay, yeah, Decatur.
Yeah,
so I think you're related.
My Grandpa Gordon during COVID, and no, he didn't die of COVID. He was 95. He fought and he lived through the Great Depression. He was the oldest of five children. He joined the Army in World War II at 17. Also, fought in Europe in the infantry in the Army.
Wow.
Yep.
Strongest man I've ever known. Lost my grandma.
Grandfather didn't go to World War II because he was a master caster at the foundry making tank turrets.
So he was more important to stay at home and do that.
So can you do Jeff and Rocky, can you do the ancestry and start connecting the dots? Maybe
that's what I was going to tell you right now is the gift my grandfather gave me before he passed just over 2 years ago at 95 years old. Both my grandfathers, my mom's father and my father's father, died at 95, and both of them were in World War II. Yeah. One was in the Navy on a sub, and that's my mom's dad. And the other was infantry in the Army. And that's my Grandpa Gordon, and I was really, really close with him. Gosh, I still wish I could had him to talk to. Strongest man I've ever known in my life. At my age, he had to bury my grandma who died of a brain tumor, you know, and she didn't drink or smoke or nothing.
Yeah.
He got hit by a tornado and rode a refrigerator across the yard and was on WGN TV out of Chicago. Head wrapped up. Anyway, he did our genealogy and it took him 15 years of diligent study. Okay. And I'm like, okay, white. That's that could be anywhere in Europe, right? You know, Great Britain, you know, Ireland, Scotland. I go, so what did you find out, Grandpa? He goes, well, we're Welsh. We're from Wales.
Yep.
I go, oh, no kidding. He goes, you're direct bloodline.
That's why two of my cousins have red hair.
Yeah, we are. He goes, we're direct bloodline descendants of Sir William White, who was instrumental in rounding up the pilgrims to escape religious persecution and board the Mayflower. And the first child, actually born just off the coast of Plymouth Rock, was a white. So it was considered, she was considered the first child born in the New World.
I had heard the same story from my grandmother.
You heard that story too, Rocky?
I heard that same story from my grandmother.
There we go. No, so I want to know if you guys are related.
I'll tell you another interesting fact. My grandma told me I'm the seventh firstborn child, all sons.
Oh, wow.
I'll tell you another interesting fact.
He actually registered. He and I are on the Mayflower registry.
What is the other story, Rocky?
Okay, on my namesake side, my dad's side, his or my this ancestor synchronicity is first going. Came here in 1769 and left his job as a professor at Cambridge University. Sold all of his properties, bought four.
Did you say Cambridge University? Did you just say Cambridge University?
In England.
Yeah, that's where my twin daughters are getting their masters right now. Madeline and Marlene White are getting their masters at Cambridge University right now.
Yeah. I'm talking about on my dad's side now. My ancestor came over and founded a place in Rhode Island, what's now Rhode Island. And he's listed in the who's who of America because he started the first large mercantile because that's what his professorship was about, was moving merchandise and economics. Two of his sons, one of them was with the Swamp Fox, as we know it on the movies, The Patriot.
Yes.
He was the lieutenant for that guy.
Mel Gibson played him.
Yeah, the other one was working up in Massachusetts somewhere with another guy who was attached to George Washington. And then later on, they started filtering around. I found out about 3 years ago that a woman I've known since 81, I knew her through her husband and my wife. She was my freaking cousin all this time. And her nephew was my roommate in the military. Now, I'm related to everybody who bears my name because only one family of Seelys came here.
Wow.
So Tick, what do you think the odds are that Rocky and I are somewhere related?
Everybody's related somehow.
So you could do the ancestry.
There's a lot of dogs in the yard, man. There's a lot of dogs in the yard.
There's just the thick of it.
Yeah. I mean, I out here, I'm related to 95% of the people who have my name because in the 1800s, they started the Mormon movement. They came out of northern Pennsylvania and they moved west. And my grandfather's dad decided he was going to stay in Louisville, and my grandfather moved up into Indiana. The rest of them all moved west to Utah and all around. And in Smithfield, Utah, there's 1,000 of them buried there.
Wow.
From different generations. They're all there because my dad's cousin done the genealogy for it. It took him like 25 years. Traced it back to the 14th century.
Wow.
Dude, I guarantee you and I are probably related. Easily.
Okay, so I'm the godmother of the reunion. Okay, so this party that you guys reunited, I'm the godmother.
I had one guy who was my roommate in the military for 4 years.
Uh-huh.
I didn't know. And we stuck together like glue. People call her Starsky and Hutch.
Uh-huh.
Okay? That's how close we were. And when I left the first time and then I came back in, it was like another 10 years before I met up with him again. He was still there. He was still in the division.
You know, Hutch just passed away the other day at 80 years old.
Yeah. But there's so many similarities you have. Like I go into pack to do my will the first time. The girl looks at me, says, "We've got the same name. I looked at her name tag and yeah, we are. I said, "I bet your family went from Salt Lake City area to California." She goes, "Yeah, they did." I said, "Yeah, we're related. You're somewhere around my probably 50th cousin."
Ain't that something?
I had a bankruptcy a while back just to get away from everything. I took a bankruptcy and my fucking lawyer had my same name.
Well, you know, Rocky, the first time that I think I met you and I met Marcos, remember that time?
Yeah.
That, it was on Marcos' show. That was the first time I met. And then Marcos and I, we've been doing shows after that. Marcos, you're here. I know you've been listening to this.
Well, Rocky, I've known you for probably two or three years now, because I keep changing my handles and I keep buying burner phones.
Yeah.
Just because I don't trust three-letter agencies at all.
Yeah, but hell, they got your burner phone now, man.
Well, you have to invite me if you reunite cousins, if your cousins are long cousins, or, you know.
Rocky,
you have to invite me, Jeff and Rocky.
I met you on Kilted Christian. I was JW47 back then.
Hey, guys.
I was on this show several times.
Your name is Rocky.
Yeah.
You're very famous.
Well, I get on here and I talk about things, man. I know a lot of stuff. I've been doing research since the 70s.
And it was his birthday yesterday, Marcos, so we can play the happy birthday song.
Rocky is very smart and very wise. That's why Duncan had him on all the time. How come you haven't been on Kilted?
He gets on about the time I lose my signals around here. I'm out here in Montana.
Okay. Man. I just always enjoyed you going on there with Duncan. That was always good because you're smart and you're wise. And
I also think I was always learning sometimes too.
I was always learning something when I was listening to you. You know, something.
I'm on a whole bunch of other shows now, but you know, there's some shows that I don't get on anymore because they just kind of stop being interested. Not that they're interesting, it just stopped getting interested about what I was talking about most of the time, trying to point things out to people.
And they didn't want to hear it.
A lot of hate mail.
Huh? And me too. And what it is these people have what's known as normalcy bias. And that's where their bias towards normalcy. No, the writing's on the freaking wall.
Don't you mean cognitive dissonance?
Exactly.
I mean, I spent 18 years in the medical
Rocky,
field.
Sue is saying hi. She hasn't seen you for a long time. I don't think Rocky is able to see the chat, guys. So I'm reading what the chat says, Rocky.
They say happy birthday to Rocky.
Saying hi.
Well, thanks.
One birthday. Everyone after is an anniversary. It's a birthday.
Just happy birthday, Rocky.
Thanks.
And soon in 3 days.
No. I'm going to have to go silent. I'm going to have to go silent for a few minutes. I got to feed my dogs.
Well, and Rocky, let me say one last thing. Happy birthday and many more.
I hope so.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, Rocky. We have to. You have to reunite with your cousin Jeff.
To be related.
Oh yes, I felt, and you know the synchronicity and how you know the similar places that you guys were. You know all the experience, and then it doesn't matter the years of difference. You know, but like you were, he was there first, or you were there first. But I think it's, you know, it's a lot of a.
Yeah, he's 12 years older than I am.
Uh-huh.
I'm back.
But I feel his energy young too, because I met him through Marcos. It was amazing how the rapport, you know, with his mind is, and we were talking about different subjects the time that I met him, you know, and it was one subject and another subject and another subject, you know.
He don't pull any punches, man.
Yes.
He'll tell you straight up how it is, and he don't sugarcoat shit.
No. Sue,
Rocky's
turning 68. He turned 68 yesterday. I'm sorry, Rocky. She's asking on the chat.
So. I said, you can't sugarcoat anything anymore. You know?
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I pointed out to UTK that, or TK. T-I-K, that, you know, there's things that people have to learn how to do, you know, and I've been instructed on how to do those things years ago, and I do them every now and then whenever I just need to, or think I need to practice, you know, and people just blow it off like, oh, I got to worry about that. It doesn't look that way. I mean, you know, anything can be an emergency where you have to do something. I mean, out here where I'm at, if you get off the road with a half a tank of gas, you're going to get stranded because that road might go for 100 miles. And if you don't have a little bit of food in there, you might be hungry for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go anywhere without an extra 5-gallon gas tank, a 5-gallon gas can in the back of my rig.
Yeah, but how many times do you go off road without any food or water? A lot of people do.
Well, I call that fasting.
Most people call that a nervous breakdown.
Jeff, Sue is saying hi in the chat to you.
As long as I got a little caffeine and a little bit of nicotine, I'm good to go.
That's what I'm looking at too, man. But, you know, some people aren't even prepared to change a tire. You know, they don't even know how to do that.
Or read a map.
They say, well, I'll just call the daggone road company and they'll come out and change it for me. No. But yeah, if they can find you.
Yeah.
You know,
my dad was a watch repair and he always taught me, you know, you need to learn how to survive. You need to do, you know, the due diligence on things and not replace things. You have to repair them. Make sure you find a way to repair them first. And the only way you're going to take value of the things, because he always managed his time, you know, because he was a watch repair. So the time was very important for him. So by replacing, I learned how to take care of things, you know, and how to be prepared for things and not just have someone fix the things for me.
So, now, see, well, your name is, you put your name as Tick Radio.
That's why it's kind of like the old story I used to tell.
It's kind of like the old story I used to tell people. You know, a woman sitting there in the front yard, it's raining like crazy, and the water's reaching her porch. She goes inside. Somebody comes by in a boat and says, come on out, but we'll get you out of here. So, no, God will take care of me. About 3 hours later, there's flooding, and she's up on top of the roof, and they come by again and say, hey, man, get on the boat. It's going to get worse. No, God will take care of me. And pretty soon, she's up to her neck of water, and she drowns. And she makes it to the pearly gates, and she says, God, I asked for help, and you didn't help me. He said, I sent you 2 boats. You have to help yourself.
Booyah.
God right. only helps those who right. help themselves.
Right.
And that's why I get upset with people right now that are waiting for the rapture. You know, like the rapture is going to come and yank him into heaven. And I'm like, do you even understand the trials and tribulations that are coming first?
We've already been in that.
Yeah.
Really look back. We've already been in that.
I'm afraid. So, you know, that's why I'm doing this 90-day retreat. I recruited all these guys. They're all ex-military. And we want to go see what we still have left in the tank. And we're going to get it damn done.
Let me point something out to you. Rapture says it's going to be 7 years of tribulation. On whose time belt? God's? Because he made the earth in 7 days. We might have been going through this since the fall of the Roman Empire. And it's just now getting to the end of the 7 years that God has on his clock. You know, we don't know. All you can do is prepare and fight like hell. Fight like you're the third monkey on Noah's Ark and it's getting ready to rain.
Well, I've got 2 course study language books that I'm taking with me. One is to learn Latin, and the other is to learn Greek.
Oh, nice. Jeff, Sue is saying hi in the chat. Sue from UK? Yes, Sue from UK.
Hey, Sue.
I only know 2 languages. I only know 2 languages.
Sue's awesome. I know she is. Yeah.
I only know 2 languages, English and 12 gauge. You can scream at somebody all you want when they're coming at you, but when they hear that shotgun racket, all of a sudden they get fear of God in them.
You didn't pick up any Espanol when you were down
south. Espanol, no gracias.
What I got, you don't want me to say on Podbean.
No, thank you. Thank you, Rocky.
That's the Espanol
today. I even know some of that Korean too that you don't want to speak in public either.
So, Rocky, before
about in Korea, did you ever get a chance to sample some soju?
Oh yeah,
that will knock you on your proverbial.
I broke my alcoholic, it's a
Korean rice liquor, and it
I heard of that.
Yeah, it's really killer though if you stick it in a 1 gallon pitcher, one bottle in a 1 gallon pitcher, and then you pour in about 2 liters of Dagon Gatorade. You sit there, you don't feel a thing, and then when you stand up, you hit the floor.
Yes, you do. I mean,
yeah, it's called a kettle. It's called
a
kettle.
Was the thing about Operation Team Spirit. We got like 2 days off, and I lost both days to soju.
Oh, I lost a whole week to that.
So
it's been 90 days.
I only have 6 minutes, and before we finish, no, that's fine. I just want to let you know. And Marcos wants to play something for you. So as soon as you finish talking, Marcos will play a song. And then Sue, your birthday is coming up. It's 1.5 days, and it's Sue's birthday. So Marcos, if you want to play something for Sue too, so I know. Just want to do it. I didn't want to interrupt. Go ahead, Rocky.
I was going to say, I spent 90 days up on the DMZ in Guard Post Olette. And when I came down and took my pass, I spent a whole week inebriated.
On soju.
On soju. I'm done.
Thank you, guys. Gracias, Rocky, Jeff, everyone. Thank you. I'm going to let Marcos do the magic that he does with the music.
Awesome. Okay. Thank you. I love you guys.
I'll see you. I'll see you soon.
Hey, Rocky, it was really good to connect with you tonight.
Yes. Thanks, I'm the godmother of the reconnection.
Don't mention it, cuz.
You are. I bet we're cousins.
Prima. Don't mention it,
cuz. For the next live, TIK Radio.